This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Satellites in space are providing a view of troubled hotspots on our coral reefs. It's a first for marine scientists. Greg Asner is the director of the Center for Global Discovery and Conservation Science at Arizona State University. He's been working out of a Big Island lab this summer to monitor critical changes linked to global warming. Asner has teamed up with NOAA and Hawaii's Division of Aquatic Resources. He shares some insights about the factors at work and efforts to build coral resiliency as well.
My team is unique. We use satellites, aircraft, and field programs to assess these impacts that you hear about, whether they're coral reefs or tropical rainforests. We're spread around. Our home base is at ASU in Tempe, but we also have a facility in Hilo, and people don't know about that. Our science colleagues know all about it, but the public generally doesn't recognize that ASU has a strong presence working with decision makers and conservation and management people across the state of Hawaii as well.
Well, it's wonderful that we can use these tools to help broaden our knowledge about what's going on in real time.
Yeah, it's a key issue. So a lot of times science will do kind of a retrospective on something that happens, and that's useful. We learn from it. And if, in the best case, what we learn, we use, you know, in decision making going forward. Nowadays, the technology is evolving fast, and it's evolving in the area of real-time decision-making, real-time information and knowledge. And that's really what we're doing here in Hawaii with coral bleaching and with other coral reef issues. We're using satellites and our aircraft program and our field network with our colleagues to generate information as these events unfold.
So give us the snapshot. Where has it been most destructive to our reefs?
The 2019 marine heat wave, that's what a scientist call it. It's like a heat wave passing through a city, except we now get them in the ocean. And it's the second or third biggest one, depending on how you look at it, in modern scientific contemporary times here in Hawaii. So we had one in 2014, then we had a big one in 2015, and now this one in 2019. And the geography of the impact is super variable. It's not like all the reef dies, and it's not like it's got a uniform effect across all reefs from the Big Island to Niihau. It's really geographically complex. And our satellite tracking, which is the first time it's ever been done anywhere on the planet, applied here in Hawaii, shows that there are hot spots of bleaching that occurred. Nearly every island has 1 to 5 hot spots. And when I say a hot spot, I mean some stretch of reef somewhere that you might dive or you might miss if you go diving, because they're kind of far flung around the islands. And we've mapped those hot spots of bleaching, and I could talk about each of those. But also we've mapped with the satellite where the reef did not bleach or where bleaching was very minor. And that helps us understand not only the variation, but the fact that we still have a lot of reef to protect, and that there are a lot of actions that we need to take to protect the reefs that are getting through these heat waves.
So how do the currents affect that picture?
Currents are huge. Currents and wind are primary drivers or mediators of these marine heat waves. And so if you look at a map just from the seawater perspective, NOAA does this part. They map where the water got hot, and it started getting hot in late July, early August, and it peaked around, call it, mid-October, and now it's coming down. But that the heat map itself is driven by wind and current, at least to some degree, and it showed hot spots of heating in South Kona in particular, on the leeward side of the Big Island, and also the leeward part of Maui Nui. So that's the leeward part of Maui itself, parts of Molokai, parts of Lanai and Koholawe. So those were some of the hottest of hot spots, and that's driven by the local and regional currents, but also by the big winds and really the lack of wind that we had. Across the trade winds were really weak during this heat wave, and that's part of the driver of the heat wave itself.
I know swimming out on the south shore here on Oahu, it's almost as if someone has just dragged a paintbrush of white paint and you've just gotten the tips of some of the coral, not
mm-hmm.
huge coral heads, you know, like you've got on the leeward side.
Yeah, so it's complex. So not only is the heat wave itself complex, but where the coral is and its stage and age Some corals are juveniles. They're animals, so we actually call them juveniles. And then some are adults. And they weather these heat waves differently depending on their size and the species that they represent. And so the geography of this is not just the seawater heat itself, but the biology and the actual communities of corals that are out there. So what you saw was probably a community of corals that didn't go totally belly up during the heat wave, but they were really stressed. And so you saw that the tips, the ends of those corals bleached out. That's very common in the 2019 event. A little less common this time, we're happy to say, was the full-on bleaching and total mortality that we saw in 2015. In 2015, we lost at least 30% of our corals in about 8 weeks. Some areas had 80, 90% loss in some bays and locations. This year, it's the average is something like, I'm going to guess now, I don't have all of our data compiled, but I'm going to say probably lost 10 to 15% on an average, but with some hot spots that we have found by satellite of 50% bleaching. And it's just really hard to do it in the water. You have to use satellites along with your in-water techniques.
Yeah, you need the wide-angle view.
Yeah, it's critical now. And I think we've changed the narrative enough that we can't really go back into the old ways. I'm a 25-year science veteran, and I've been doing this science so long. I've seen the limits of diving with thousands and thousands of hours of diving. We still can't get the geography pinned down. So now we partner our field work with our satellite work to get that big picture and the details as well.
Right. We have those high-tech tools. Let's use them.
Yeah, we need to use them. A lot of these high-tech tools were designed for other purposes. In environmental work, they're often designed for agriculture or forestry. But we've developed and modified the approaches that we have, these techniques we have for seeing through seawater with these satellites and seeing what's going on the seafloor itself. And that's been the big breakthrough that we've created here in Hawaii for Hawaii, and then we hope to apply it elsewhere around the planet.
You talk about the different age of coral. What tends to be more resilient, the older or the younger coral?
It depends on the species, but overall, the young corals have the hardest time. And we, meaning the science community that I'm part of, don't really know why. We have some hints and some hunches that when they're juveniles, they just haven't built in their resilience in their lifetime to handle temperature fluctuation. So if they're a juvenile coral, if they're, you know, an inch in diameter, and they've grown up in that interim period between heat waves, and then you get a heat wave, bam, it knocks them out. And we see that everywhere. That's a pretty uniform response of juvenile corals, whereas the older, more mature, decades to hundreds of year old corals, they have a big variable response as well. But what we saw in 2019 is a lot of the big corals did do better than the juvenile.
Too bad you can't like inoculate them, you know, vaccinate them.
There is a team. There's a lot of interesting. It's totally in the research realm. We're not talking about management realm yet, but down in the science research realm, there are people who are thinking about all sorts of approaches for strengthening our reefs. And some of those do include treating corals, almost like medically. And I don't know what the outcomes of those approaches would ever be on the scale of, say, management, which is, you know, all eight main islands. But there are people thinking about the problem because we got to do more to protect these corals. And we know some of the basics of what we can do to protect them, but the people are still innovating with new ideas every day.
What about the thought that you could do some gene editing?
There are folks that do that. University of Hawaii has had a leadership role in that thinking, very much in the research space. It has some promise, but the truth is we don't know. And, you know, gene editing in the environment has its pitfalls and dangers as well. And so those are things that have to be really worked out over a long period of time. The problem is we don't have a lot of time. These heat waves are coming frequently now, or more and more frequently. NOAA predicts that by 2030, just 10 years from now, we could be having marine heat waves here in Hawaii every other year. And so we don't have a lot of time, and those deeper genetic and medical style approaches are likely not to be that impactful in the next 5 years. So what do we do now? A lot of it has to do with managing secondary stress on the reef, and that's why I work so closely with the LNR.
Right, yeah, no, they just rolled out the Coral Pledge, and so that's kind of hand-in-hand, just saying, look, how do we reduce the stressors where we can?
Yeah, and those aren't minor. We work very closely with DLNR DAR on those six topics. We have a lot of science background on that. Some of them are no-brainers, like anchoring or stepping on coral. I spend a lot of my time on the Big Island, and you see tourists, being tourists, and they do need to be educated not to step on coral. But some of the bigger issues have to do with the fishery. They have to do with chemical pollutants from land to sea. Those are all not minor esoteric issues. Those are now well known to be substantial here in Hawaii. And they put a lot of secondary stress on reefs and on corals in particular on these reefs, in ways that make them far more susceptible to dying in a heat wave. And the science shows that very clearly. So these six steps are important. They're not minor. They're not just to engage the community. They are to engage the community, but they really have a positive impact if we can follow those six steps.
Okay, well, hopefully we can track the progress as we get those wide-angle views from up above.
Yeah, that's right. We'll be watching from above. We look every day, believe it or not, we get a view, and then we report from those views every week. So everybody, the public gets to see it once a week. With DAR and with NOAA, my team launched HawaiiCoral.org. It was launched for the 2019 bleaching event, but we have decided to transition it to a long-term website for updates and engagement across Hawaii for the long term. So we're going to keep it going.
We've been talking to Arizona State University researcher Greg Asner, who's been compiling data about the health of our coral reefs with help from satellites far out in space. You can see for yourself where bleaching is occurring by going to a relatively new website, HawaiiCoral.org.